This is PodTech.net. I'm Rio Pacino. I'm here with Greg Maletic, writer, director, and producer of The Future of Pinball. How's it going, Greg?
It's going great.
Your film is titled The Future of Pinball, which is kind of ironic since the pinball industry is virtually non-existent. Why do a documentary on pinball?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. I kind of approached the topic from, I wanted to do a documentary about the creative process and how it's specifically applied to business. And so I was kind of looking for various ideas about designing products. I thought that might be a cool genre for a documentary that I hadn't seen well covered. And so I came across the idea of doing on a pinball machine. I happened to own a Pinball 2000 machine. I actually wasn't really into pinball that much throughout most of the 80s and 90s. I was big into video games. But I came up with the idea of starting a company that would re-theme old pinball machines. I was looking for something new to do, and so that, for some reason, that idea hit me. And this Pinball 2000 machine really caught my attention because, for those of you who don't know, Pinball 2000 was the last series of machines that were built by Williams Pinball, who was the largest manufacturer in the world. And these machines are PC-based. Even though they're a real pinball machine, they have a PC at their heart that drives what they do. And so it occurred to me, being from a software background, this was an interesting machine that I could potentially buy. I could buy up old machines and retheme them and do new games based on them. So that's why I owned the machine. And anyway, I kept it in the office of my software company while I was kind of, you know, investigating the machine. And I noticed people there loved playing this thing. They would not stop playing it. And these were not diehard pinball fans. These were, you know, just random people who, you know, just found the machine interesting and fun to play. And in the meantime, while this was going on, Williams shut down their pinball group. And so the idea kind of arose to me, well, you know, if people love playing this, why did this thing die? And so that it was what sort of drove the initial thought for doing the documentary. You mentioned the title of the film. It is kind of an ironic title. It can be interpreted a couple of ways. One is the tagline for the Pinball 2000 machines was literally the future of pinball. If you look at the literature, that's what it says on there.
Right.
And so in that sense, it's a literal title, but also it's an ironic one in that you're right in that the pinball industry, it's not exactly dead yet, but it isn't exactly thriving either. There's only one company left in the world producing pinball, and they're based off Chicago like Williams was, and they've been producing pinball since about, started making pinball about the week that Williams closed down. It happened concurrently with that.
Now I understand that you have a partnership in creating this documentary, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, I started working with a guy named Greg Dunlap originally, and Greg was an engineer at Williams, and he came to Williams in the mid-90s in order to work on pinball. And he was put first in the slot machine group because they needed people there in their software group there. But he always wanted to transition to pinball. And unfortunately, William shut down pinball before he was actually able to do that. But he had a lot of firsthand knowledge of what went on at Williams during this period of time. I came up with the idea for this film, and I was starting to make it and do some research. I wasn't really making it yet. And then I came across Greg, who was making the same film on his own in Chicago. And we figured that two documentaries on this subject was probably one too many, and so we decided to pool our efforts. This is back in, I think, 2001 or 2002. And so for at least a few months, we worked together on it. And Greg had all the contacts in the industry, which was really beneficial to me. I was able to get interviews with a lot of the key Williams employees. And unfortunately, Greg had to drop out after about 6 or 9 months of effort working with me. And so at that point, I kind of took over the project and have been producing it since then. But Greg was instrumental in getting it started. And then he's also made some appearances with me recently at various events and so on.
Give us a brief description of what the film entails, what it's about.
Yeah, the film is an hour-long documentary about the creation of Pinball 2000 and the story of its sort of rise and ultimate fall, unfortunately. I don't think I'm giving away too much by saying that it failed at the end. The machine was built in the mid-90s, or late-90s, actually. At the time, what was going on is Williams was the world's largest pinball manufacturer. They owned about 80% of the worldwide market. And there was only one or two other companies that were producing pinball at the same time that made up the other 20%. And so pinball Most people think that pinball died when video games came out in the 80s. And in fact, that's actually not true. Pinball actually saw its greatest successes in the early 90s with releases of machines like the Addams Family and Twilight Zone. Williams sold more machines in the early 90s, in 1992 and 93, than they ever had before. So actually, the industry was doing quite well, and it did so well in the early 90s, it actually sort of glutted the market. And as a result, sales just dropped down to almost nothing. So they were panicking. They didn't know what to do.
Now, was it simply because of oversaturation of machines into the market, flooding those into the market? Or, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, I'd assume that, the home consoles, the current-gen consoles, and into the next-gen consoles, that probably contributed to it. Am I correct in that?
It did. It did into the overall market. What was going on is by the mid to late 90s, the entire coin-op industry was having a serious problem. I mean, Williams was actually at the same time that they were toying with getting rid of the pinball group, they were also toying with getting rid of their coin-op video game group as well. So the whole coin-op industry had some serious problems at that point, and pinball was suffering as a piece of that. They were probably suffering more dramatically because pinball machines have a problem in that they're big and they're expensive to maintain. Video games are easier, they don't break as often, and smaller. And so operators tend to like those better than pinball machines. The downside to video games is that consoles killed them even faster than pinball machines. In some ways, coin-op video games have an even shorter life than pinball machines do today, because pinball, at the very least, gives you something you can't get at home, where coin-op video games are typically virtually the same games you can play at home.
Who did you get for the film?
I got all of the key guys at Williams who designed the Pinball 2000 machines. And so the main guy I focus on is George Gomez, and he was a pinball designer at Williams through the 90s. Williams was dominated by the designers of the pinball games. They really kind of ran the show there, even more so than like the CEO and management did. They were kind of the ones that were really in charge of what was going on. And the company was doing so well that nobody really questioned that architecture. I mean, you know, there's a section in the film where George Gomez says, you know, the CEO would come in and say, you know, I think you should make that blue. And he's like, well, I'll take it under consideration. And that was just sort of the attitude they had. They were making so much money that they were happy to let the designers run free. And that caused some problems also in that every designer had to do specialized parts for their machines. So everybody had, you know, ball poppers that were different or flippers that were different. They had all these custom parts made for every machine that, and it wasn't a very efficient way to run a company. So that's one of the things that led to their problems. But anyway, I'm off track there. George Gomez is one of the lead designers there, and there were about 7 design teams. He was the head of one of them. And George was the one that was in charge of the Pinball 2000 effort. Pinball 2000, I don't think I fully completed the story, but Pinball 2000 was Williams' effort to try and reinvent the pinball industry after this kind of huge malaise they were in the mid to late 90s. They wanted to come up with some brand new kind of pinball machine that would make all the old machines on the market seem totally obsolete. They had done this before in like the early 90s on machines like the Addams Family, where they have like a dot matrix display, the orange display. Those became very common in the early 90s. And once those were a big hit, and once that became popular, they didn't have that. Operators didn't want them anymore. And so they bought the new machines to replace the old ones. And so Williams' goal was to come up with something brand new that would make the old stuff look old.
I've never even heard of Pinball 2000 prior to hearing about your documentary. What ultimately led to its demise? I mean, reading about it and actually taking a look at the machine and seeing what it's all about, using the 3D effects, you know, and having the ball being able to read those 3D graphics. Mm-hmm. To me, that's just totally revolutionary, in my opinion, as far as pinball is concerned. However, it still failed. Why?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's not one simple reason. There was a bunch of things that happened simultaneously. I mean, the ultimate one is the machines were not a gigantic hit. They were a success, but they weren't like a mind-blowing success. And the problem they faced was Williams was a public company, and a public company has a lot of obligation to its investors to sort of prove they're going to be growing over the upcoming quarters. And when you go to Wall Street and you say, we're going to try and reinvent the pinball industry, an industry that everyone perceives as being dead, even more than what it really was. I mean, it was definitely dying, no question, but people's perception of pinball is that it's pretty much gone now. And so the idea that you can go to the public markets and say, we're going to reinvent pinball, it's a hard thing to sell, especially when you have another division that's making money hand over fist making video slot machines, which is what Williams was really doing a lot of at that
point. Now, did that contribute to them eventually shutting down pinball, in slot machines?
It did, because management kind of looked at the situation and said, we can put dollars into trying to reinvent pinball, or we can put dollars into, you know, making slot machines, which we know will get us a great return. Pinball is, even with Pinball 2000, which everyone was very excited about and got a good response to, the returns weren't even close to what you can get off a video slot machine. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately they decided that they just couldn't afford to put more money into it.
Now, how long was Pinball 2000 out on the market?
Only about 9 months, actually. So it was very quick.
No wonder I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, they spent about 2 years developing the platform, and then they put out one machine called Revenge from Mars, and that machine did pretty well. It sold 7,000 units, which in the coin-op industry is a pretty solid, it's a hit. I mean, it's a good number. And then the second machine they did was Star Wars Episode I, which was themed after the 99 Lucasfilm. And that machine did well, but disappointingly. They were hoping to sell at least 10,000 units for that machine after Revenge from Mars had done 7,000. And instead, they only sold 5. And there are various reasons for that. One of them, sort of a timing issue with when the machine came out. It came out in the U.S. much after the film came out. They raised the price on it substantially over Revenge from Mars because they thought they had a big hit on their hands with a Star Wars-based theme, and a bunch of people canceled their orders. So there are a lot of little things that the documentary goes into about why that was a problem, but not long after they produced Star Wars, they decided to pull the plug on Pinball 2000.
Considering the fact that the people at Williams put in a lot of work and a lot of effort into revolutionizing pinball itself, how disappointed were they when Williams decided to just cut the cord on pinball?
They were pretty devastated. Most of them were pretty surprised about it. They didn't really see it coming. They thought they had, done what everyone thought was impossible, which was kind of reinvigorate the pinball market with something that was new and exciting. And so most of them were very surprised. And in fact, the guy who was is the lead in my film, George Gomez, just felt so terribly about it that for a couple of years he didn't want to be in the film. He didn't want to talk about what was going on. And he just, I think after a while, after he saw that other guys were participating in the movie who were on the team, I think he felt better about it and decided to talk. But yeah, some of them get kind of emotional when they're talking about it. It was a really intense, really fun period for them and very exciting. And they sort of felt like the plug got pulled prematurely. They were very excited about the machines that were coming up after the machines that had come out, because they were sort of learning how to use the new technology and getting more familiar with it. And so they were pretty excited about where it was going to go.
Is there anything during the time you were filming that you learned about the industry, the pinball industry, that you didn't know before?
Well, I mean, the biggest surprise to me when I started investigating the industry was that actually the industry didn't die in the 80s. I thought kind of, my perception was that, video killed pinball and that was kind of the end of it, and it was kind of, dragging along. But I didn't know there was this huge heyday in the early 90s, actually, that was a big sensation. And I hadn't played pinball, actually, in probably 20 years. And since then, during the course of making the movie, I've obviously gotten really into it. And so it's a lot of fun. And it's fun in a way. It's not fun just like in a nostalgic sense, is like, the way playing an Atari 2600 game is sort of fun to look at. It's fun for like 2 minutes. Pinball actually is legitimately fun. At least most, many of the games are. And so that was a surprise for me also, learning, how much I really enjoyed pinball. And I think it still has a lot to offer, actually. Now, whether the industry, there's only one company in the world that still makes pinball. There's CERN Pinball. And they're doing okay. I think they're doing kind of break-even business on their pinball business, as far as I can tell. And so we'll see how long that'll last. I mean, I hope it keeps on going. But I think pinball still does have something to offer, even in the era of video games and home consoles.
Do you see it surviving?
It's a good question. It's becoming more of a home game, actually, strangely, over the past 5 or 10 years. Collectors and other people are buying them to put in their, their home rec rooms,
right,
and stuff like media rooms.
Exactly. Or bars.
Exactly, yeah. And so back in the Williams days, I think about, it was much less than 5% of the machines they sold that were owned by individuals. Most of them went to arcades and bars and bowling alleys and so on. And now I think for Stern, I don't have the real statistics, but my impression is it's something somewhere around 20 to 40% go to individuals and collectors. And so that market has gotten much, much bigger. The makeup of the market has shifted quite a bit. And so in that environment, you know, I can imagine one or maybe two people, companies making pinball going forward. Whether they can keep it going more than 10 or 20 years, it'll be really interesting to see if that's feasible or not. You know, hard to say.
As far as these Pinball 2000 machines, how many of them exist? Are they a rare?
Well, they made rarity? They're not too rare. I mean, you don't see them that often, but they can be found on eBay. I bought mine on eBay, and they made about 12,000 of them. So there's a fair number of them floating around out there. And since they're relatively new, they're also generally in pretty good shape. And so if somebody really wants one, they can find one.
Now let's go ahead and focus on the film itself. Where has the film been shown so far, and how have people responded to it?
Yeah, it's just been shown publicly in just a couple of places. It was shown at the San Francisco Documentary Festival back in May, I believe. That was the first public showing of it. And then it was shown more recently at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland, Oregon for a week. And people have reacted extremely positively to the film so far. Pinball fans enjoy it because it's a way to sort of, you know, immerse yourself in this pinball world and get to hear first person from these people they've been worshiping for all these decades, you know, what about the process of designing a pinball machine and what the industry is like and what it's like inside of a pinball manufacturer. And so pinball fans enjoy it a lot. The big challenge I kind of faced when I started to make the film was I wanted to make a film that you didn't have to be a pinball fan to enjoy. I wanted, you know, it isn't necessarily a movie for everyone, but I wanted sort of like people who are into technology, into gaming, sort of like, and also kind of like the popular science crowd, like the Maker Faire, you know, Make Magazine sort of crowd. I wanted them to be able to see it and appreciate it for a story about creativity mixed with technology. Not so much about pinball. Pinball happens to be a really interesting product, I think, but it's more of a story about creativity and technology and trying to succeed in the marketplace when all the odds are stacked against you, essentially.
Now, you mentioned technology. I've heard that you implemented a podcast in your film. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big push right now for me for the film is to do a DVD. And so I'm hoping to get that out in the next couple of months, and so people can go to my website and go to other venues online and purchase the DVD. And as part of the DVD, I wanted to have a director's commentary to talk about the film. And in preparing that, I realized, well, I have to admit, I got the idea from Kevin Smith, the director of Clerks. Clerks 2 is coming out in the next week or two, and he has a podcast coming out, so you can go see his film. And then if you're a big fan, you can go back a second time and bring your iPod with you and listen to the director's commentary while you're listening to the film. And I saw that in an interview in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago, you know, just like about 3 or 4 days before the Clinton Street Theater showing. And I thought, this is a great idea, and I have my director's commentary, you know, mostly done. I can just take this and put it up on the web, and people can download it. And so I don't have any stats on how many people downloaded it, but I think it did prompt at least a couple of people to come back and see the movie a second time to check out the director's commentary.
Do you see that becoming more popular, the whole idea of theater podcasting and director's commentary?
I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, it suffers from a couple of technical glitches, the main one being, like, if you're not synced up perfectly, or if you, like, turn off your iPod or something, or hit the chapter button by accident, like, you know, you have no chance of getting back to where you're the proper location in the film. It's not like a DVD where it's automatically baked in there as being synced in with the film. So there's a bit of a technical challenge with it, but I think it's a really good idea. And I think, you know, I think we may see stuff like that. I was just seeing today on the web that the guy that used to do Mystery Science Theater 3000 has a website now where he's going to sell podcasts for old horror films and other stuff on the web. And so you can rent a movie and sort of get the Mystery Science Theater experience with your iPod while you're watching the movie on your TV.
What are your thoughts on podcasting in general? Do you see the craze actually growing?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think that I can speak for myself. I mean, I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm walking down the street. And it's just such a convenient way to get your content. And I think the industry sees it going. I mean, if you look at what's happening in TV right now, clearly the TV programmers are see this model as being valid as, you know, promoting, you know, for video content. But it's exactly the same for audio. And I think it'll actually open up the world to a lot of audio content that they've been missing, because people talk about like appointment TV, but they never talk about appointment radio so much. Most people don't tune in at 8:30 on Fridays to listen to a radio program. However, with podcasting, I think that it actually makes that kind of programming possible now. You don't have to adapt your schedule to the radio. You can make it work to your schedule. And I think it opens up a really great world of audio content that you would have missed before on the radio.
You're the kind of people that PodTech likes.
Yeah, no, I listen to them all the time. And, you know, I have an iPod Shuffle, and I just kind of walk whenever I, you know, go to the post office or whatever. I'm listening to part of it, and it's just great.
Let's go ahead and shift back to the film.
Sure.
The DVD. When is it coming out?
Yeah,
how much is it going to cost?
It's not out yet, and it'll be out. I'm shooting for early fall, so hopefully like September-ish time frame. There's a lot of work that has to be done on it. I mean, it's mostly the film itself is basically done, and there's just a couple of licensing issues I need to work through, and a couple of other, you know, detail and manufacturing issues I have to go through to put it out. But it's coming very soon. And if your listeners are interested, you can go to my website, which is thefutureofpinball.com. And you can sign up there to be on a mailing list and be notified when the DVD becomes available.
Now, what are some of the features on the DVD?
I already mentioned the director's commentary. There's also a commentary with the people in the film as well. So the people who are being interviewed, I went back to Chicago, and they're all in Chicago. Everyone, the pinball industry has always been based out of Chicago. And so I went back to Chicago and interviewed several of them while we were watching the film. And so you get to see their comments on the movie. About 2 or 3 hours of deleted scenes and outtakes, and that's mainly for the diehard pinball fans who want to know a lot about, you know, how the machine was designed, the real detailed stuff. Like, there's one section, Pat Lawler is interviewed in the movie, and Pat Lawler is a legendary designer. He's the guy that did the Addams Family and Twilight Zone, some of the really big hit machines. And there's a really nice section, like, it's like 5 or 10 minutes long, with him talking about the structure of the pinball industry. And that doesn't sound that exciting, but he actually does a pretty good job with it, and it's pretty entertaining. However, in the context of the movie, it kind of interrupted the plot line a little bit too much to have it in there, and so it's in the deleted scenes. And there's lots of stuff like that. There's some extended conversations with some designers, like Steve Kordek is one of the guys in the movie, and Steve Kordek is 95 years old. And he designed his first pinball machine in 1944. He worked for Williams from like 48 to 2000. And he's the guy that thought it would... He was the guy that first thought it would be a good idea to put two flippers at the bottom of the play field. No one had ever done it that way before. They'd placed them on the sides in various configurations, backwards from what they normally are now, but he was the one that decided to do that. And so there's a little extended conversation with him talking about the early days of the pinball industry. There's a section also on kind of lost pinball machines. So there's scenes of me playing the Pinball 2000 machines that never got released. So one of them was called Wizard Blocks, and that was being done by Pat Lawler. And so that's kind of a storied machine in the industry. And so
can you find some of those games around? Or?
There's only one of each that actually work and exist. And so I found the guy. It's a guy named Gene Cunningham that owns them. He owns a lot of the Williams assets. He makes Williams parts now. It's several hours of, you know, just extra cool pinball stuff that's pretty interesting.
Future showings of the film. For those who need their pinball fix before September, well, where is this film going to be shown at?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's nothing I can announce yet. There's nothing really that's set up right now. I'm looking into it. I would like to do, like, kind of a mini theatrical tour to promote the film on DVD. There's challenges with that, including extra licensing fees to accomplish that, and just the cost of travel and so on that makes it difficult. But it's something I would like to do. And again, if you go to the website, I'll always post news about where it will be shown well in advance, because I always try and get as many people to those things as I can.
Now, can a trailer be seen on the website as well? Is there a trailer there?
There is. If you go to the website, you can watch the trailer. It's 2.5 minutes long and gives you a pretty good overview of what the film looks like and feels like. And, please visit the website.
Okay, I'm here with Greg Maletic, writer, director, producer of The Future of Pinball. Good luck with everything, and thanks a lot for the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.